New CBS Monday.
Federal agents!
Hands where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back. About to set it up. New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got
him. Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
On his way to the end zone.
I tell you what, that was a spectacular play.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
What a play! Off to the races! Touchdown! Oh, he's done it again!
Now here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, Heath, and Ben.
Today we are being joined by one of the best of the business, one of the most accurate draft rankers. Last year, he wasn't ranking drafts. He was ranking players for your drafts. He's Jacob Gibbs of Sportsline. We will get to him in just a minute. My task today is to put the proper title on the episode. Yesterday, we did the 8 toughest players to rank. The title I gave the show was the 8 toughest players to watch, which is a completely different show. Maybe an episode. Maybe an episode we could do a little bit later. Yeah.
That sounds like a good show.
Yeah, that does. That's Jacob Gibbs that you just heard from Sportsline. We're going to tell you about Sportsline. Absolutely outstanding content. And you can get your first month for $1. And it's only $9.99 after that. You go to sportsline.com and join with the promo code HUDDLE. First month for $1 for incredible fantasy advice, gambling advice, great stuff. Jacob Gibbs, welcome back. We've had you on before. How you doing?
Doing good, Adam. Yeah, I really appreciate y'all having me on. Always psyched to have the opportunity to nerd out with some other people who think the way I do about football. I think my friends and family are probably tired of me trying to talk about DJ Chark. So it's good to have some people who are equally excited that sports are right around the corner.
Absolutely. And I've never seen you before, so I see you right now on Zoom wearing a Sportsline shirt. This is what it's like when people say, you look so much different than I thought, you know, from your voice. But we have a great email later.
Adam, didn't you say that Jacob looked like he was like a big fat dude with glasses and a goatee?
Jacob, is that who I said that about?
I think you said that's what you thought Jacob Gibbs looked like.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess it looks
pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
It looks like he doesn't belong on this podcast.
Well, we have an email that I wanted to read. Somebody said they know who to cast in the movie about fantasy football today. They've picked actors for all of us. Okay. So that'll come later. But we also, a couple other things we're going to do today. We're going to look at handcuffs, which running backs are worth handcuffing, who's the guy to get, how good could that player be. I'm going to ask you about handcuffing wide receivers. I think it makes a lot of sense if you draft Tyreek Hill to take Mecole Hardman, for example. We'll see what the guys think about that. And, you know, last year we had an email about Drew Brees, who's always great at home, and who you could pair him with that had good matchups when Brees was on the road. I don't remember if we came up with it or if the emailer came up with it, but the answer we gave was Lamar Jackson. So hopefully, you know, you put that plan into place. I've got some names that you can pair with Drew Brees today. This was inspired by a couple of emails. We'll get to that. But first, Jacob Gibbs was named the 7th most accurate draft ranker. He had the 7th most accurate draft rankings, according to Fantasy Pros last year. So what's your secret, Jacob?
No secret, I don't think. Yeah, just a lot of time that goes into those. And especially this year with no sports for the past few months, that there's been a lot of time going into those projections. So I'm excited to see what the season holds. Maybe finish better than last year.
Hope that would be great. Good luck. That's lofty expectations now. So we asked you for some players that you're higher on than the industry. And let's start with Kenyon Drake. We have, I think, 6 names here. Kenyon Drake, Robert Woods, Terry McLaurin, Amari Cooper, Paris Campbell, and Zach Moss. Drake, Drake was the number 4 running back in 8 games with Arizona. And, you know, people are very high on him, but you must be quite high on Kenyon Drake.
Yeah, I love Kenyon Drake. I actually had an incident with my computer that caused me to lose my projections about a week ago, which is awesome because that's, like I said, months worth of work. But my rankings are saved and they're based on the projections. So, like, the end results are still there. Oh. And anyway, as I've been rebuilding, the one player I was surprised to see drop a bit in my rankings is Drake. And I have been really high in him all summer, like I said, but he's still the RB9 for any PPR format, 11th player overall. So a little bit higher than ADP, but just maybe not quite as enamored as I have been throughout the offseason. I think definitely part of that has to be with the ADP that just keeps rising. But as far as Drake, the player, he's easy to fall in love with. He was, like you said, RB4, RB3 in some formats after being acquired by Arizona last week. He went off in the fantasy playoffs when people needed him most. I think he had like over 300 rushing yards and 6 touchdowns in 15 and 16. And that backfield was money for fantasy players all year long. And I think we'll probably get to Chase Edmonds later when we talk about some handcuffs. But from weeks 1 through 16, whether it's DJ or Edmonds or Drake, they combined for 319 fantasy points, which would have been the RB2 in fantasy. So like there's a ton of reasons for liking Drake. He's in a contract year, returning to that role in which he was highly successful last year. Passing volume should be there. That trio combined for 79 targets on 388 routes run in the weeks they started, which would have ranked 5th among running backs. So like, I totally get why people are into Drake. I really do like him a lot. The thing that has caused me to be a little bit more skeptical of him over the last few weeks as I've kind of redone these projections is just kind of revisiting the stats from last year. The backfield numbers in fantasy were really inflated by some unsustainable touchdown production. So that trio combined scored 16 touchdowns in the games they started, which just isn't going to happen again. I mean, they did combine to rank 11th in red zone carries and 9th in carries from within the 10-yard line, which is solid, but that's just not the type of role that's going to yield one touchdown per game like it did last year, especially in a middle-of-the-pack offense like Arizona. So the pros are there, high snap rate, heavy involvement in the passing game, and I think that does give him a safer floor than somebody like Derrick Henry or Josh Jacobs or Nick Chubb, whose snap rates are going to be a little bit more dependent on playing in positive game scripts. But the fact that, and I think you might get to this, their lead back only averaged 18 touches per game last year. So if the touchdowns aren't there, I worry that he might not have access to the type of ceiling that somebody like Joe Mixon or Miles Sanders, who I know you guys all love, have. He is someone I've been ecstatic to grab anytime I get him in the second round. But if his ADP continues to climb, if it rises any higher than like 11th or 12th, I think he might actually end up being a little overhyped. But like I said, Chase Edmonds in like the 10th or 11th round, I'm all about that life. So love Drake. Just am a little bit worried as his ADP continues to climb.
You know, it's so interesting, Dave. When Drake was, you know, going on his run, David Johnson was getting 3-4 carries a game. Chase Edmonds got 2 carries in the last 5 games of the season.
Yep.
Do you think it'll be the Kenyon Drake show, or do you think it'll be a little bit more of a split?
If we're basing it on what we saw last year, the lead back is truly a lead back. There was only one game where the backup running backs in Arizona had more than 6 carries, with the starter getting everything else. And one thing that I go back to on Drake, and maybe this is just me throwing, you know, a cold bucket of water over Jacob's head, is that he had just over 40% of his total production in Arizona in 2 games. Mm-hmm. That's touchdowns and yards, just a huge amount of numbers in 2 big games. But in those other 6 games, he still averaged around 80 total yards per game. Does that mean he's got a non-PPR floor of 8 points and maybe a PPR floor of 11 points? I know that's not what you're hoping for when you're drafting somebody with a top 15 pick, but I'm really comfortable with that floor, and he might even be better than that floor-wise. He might be good for 9 or 10 per week, not PPR, 12 to 14 per week PPR. And I think this offense could take off. I think they can run more plays than they did last year. I think they'll be more creative in the red zone. I think DeAndre Hopkins coming aboard helps in every single facet, passing and rushing. It might open things up just a little bit more for Kenyon Drake, who I think has a big role this year again.
All right, let's go to the next guy on Jacob's list, and that is Robert Woods. You know, obviously 2 touchdowns last year, that stands out. 90 catches, 1,134 yards. That was in 15 games. He's on pace for 1,210 yards and 96 catches. And remember, the Azer stat I screwed up a few shows ago, his last 7 games, he was on pace for 181 targets, not his last 8 games. So that's incredible. 7 games, 181 targets. He just got peppered. All right, so I see Robert Woods. I think, you know, maybe once we get to the end of round 3, beginning of round 4, anytime 36 or later, that's when I think we start looking at Robert Woods. What about you?
Yeah, I think, I mean, everything you just laid out there showcases what a high floor Robert Woods has. And you can also add to that that he gets extra rushing production that most receivers just don't get. So those are just kind of extra bonus points. I think about 20 fantasy points average over the last 2 years as a rusher. But I think Robert Woods, for some reason, has, I don't know, I think it's maybe just been the bad luck on touchdowns or the lack of a role in the red zone. He's been classified as a low ceiling receiver, which is why he continues to be drafted below some of these other receivers that are really excited, really easy to get excited about. But I think that there actually may be a case for Robert Woods having a sneaky high ceiling this year. And this is all speculative, of course. But if I can take just a minute to try to interpret the tea leaves here a little bit in LA, I'd be really interested to hear what you guys think, because I think everybody knows Robert Woods is undervalued, but no one really talks about what his ceiling is. So the last time the Rams had an offensive coordinator on staff was in 2017. They ranked 14th in run to pass ratio when in the red zone that year. But in 18 and 19, McVay went without an offensive coordinator. In those seasons, they just really leaned heavily on Gurley and the offensive line when in the red zone. They were the fourth highest rate run to pass ratio in the red zone during that time. So LA hired 35-year-old Kevin O'Connell as their offensive coordinator this summer, and his background is really as a passing specialist. And McVay has mentioned that the team has to change its approach after a disappointing 2019. And I think most expect that to manifest itself in more 12 personnel, as we saw down the stretch, and more two tight ends on the field. And that, I think that definitely will be part of the changes, but I think LA could also be more pass heavy in 2020, especially when in the red zone. So, I mean, when McVay has discussed this hire, he almost always mentions the positive influence he expects O'Connell to have on Goff specifically. And I think there's a chance that after moving on from Gurley as the offensive centerpiece and making some changes to the coaching staff, LA could return to at least a more neutral approach when in the red zone, not be in the bottom, you know, four or five teams. So even if that doesn't come to fruition, even without a change in offensive philosophy, Woods' target to touchdown ratio over the past two seasons was the worst in the NFL. So like that already suggests that some positive regression was coming for him this season. He's one of just eight players to be targeted at least 130 times over the past 2 years. But he has just eight touchdowns during that time. The other seven players on that list averaged 14.4 touchdowns. So like, I don't think you should expect double digit touchdowns for Woods, but I think seven or eight is totally realistic. And like, as opposed to years in the past where he was Goff's fourth or fifth option when they were in the scoring distance, I think he could realistically be the second or third option in 2020. And if they're throwing more often and he is more involved, I think seven or eight is totally realistic. And if he had eight touchdowns last year instead of two, he would have tied DeAndre Hopkins for the wide receiver five spot. And that's also with below average efficiency from Goff, which was bringing down Woods' catch rate and yards per catch. So I think if Goff bounces back and if the team is more pass heavy in the red zone, I think Woods actually could have a lot higher ceiling than people are giving him credit for. But I'm really curious what you guys think about that.
Ben?
Yeah, I pretty much agree. You laid it out really well. I mean, I think the two touchdowns last year has been talked about a lot, and I don't see any reason why he can't have seven or eight touchdown upside. And you know, once you start talking about that, you pretty clearly see a profile of a guy who can be a top 10 receiver. So it's not, you know, I agree.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, as we talk about it for Goff too, they just seem so intent on getting Todd Gurley rushing touchdowns even last year. So he's double-digit touchdowns every year. I think it bodes well for the passing game. Hopefully more touchdowns to go around. No Brandon Cooks. Yeah, Robert Woods, you love the safety there. I'm going to just get two more guys here. One of them is Amari Cooper. So he's been, you know, I don't know if it's controversial, but there's been a lot of disagreement about him on this show. And I want to know if you, because one thing that I've looked at, the cornerback matchup seemed terrible for him. And you're higher on Amari Cooper than consensus, but I want to know if that is something that you looked at. You know, I'll just get his matchups lined up, but I think it's right out of the gate. It's like Jalen Ramsey and anyway, I'll get it up. But yeah, Amari Cooper, why are you higher on him? And did you consider the cornerback matchups? And it's Jalen Ramsey in week one. And yeah, there's some tough ones there because they brought in the Eagles of Darius Slay and the Giants now have James Bradbury, and he faces Patrick Peterson. He faces the Steelers. He faces the Ravens, the 49ers. You know, did that factor in at all for you?
I think it's worth considering, but especially in what's going to be a really crazy NFL season, I am prioritizing players with upside because I think our already low ability to feel confident predicting what's going to happen is even lower. And I think Amari Cooper is one of the few receivers that's being drafted outside of the top four or five, that tier that maybe ends with Godwin or Julio, depending on what you think. I think he's one of the few that has the ability to finish as like a top three receiver in terms of ceiling. And so, yeah, it doesn't feel good to be higher than consensus on Amari Cooper, especially with the cornerback matchups like you laid out. I mean, he's super inconsistent. But I think there are a lot of reasons to believe that 2020 could be a huge year for Dallas' passing game and Amari specifically. And one of the first ones that I think gets me excited about his potential and also could help him avoid some of these matchups, and you guys have talked about it, it's just the potential that he could run an increased amount of routes from the slot. I assume you guys are probably expecting CeeDee Lamb to run most routes from the slot. Do you have any read on that right now? Or do you think the
points split? I would bank on both of them taking turns playing in the slot and ultimately Dallas decoding what defenses are doing to line up against them. Like if they see in week one that Jalen Ramsey is sticking to Cooper like glue, they'll probably either I'm not going to say with certainty that they're going to keep Cooper outside because they might think that it's better to put Ramsey in the slot and make him uncomfortable there because he doesn't play there a lot. I don't know if you can make Jalen Ramsey feel uncomfortable, but I would think that that would open their eyes to throwing more to Gallup and Lamb and just kind of using Cooper as a decoy, which doesn't sound great for fantasy, but I think it's going to be a week by week, case by case basis by week. That's what I think we're going to see from Dallas.
Okay. Anything else you want to add? Or
So I think that if he does get that slot rate, that gives him a huge boost for fantasy. For fantasy, he averaged 2.74 yards per route run since becoming a Cowboy when running routes from the slot, which is much higher than his 2.14 from the perimeter. It's the second best mark in the NFL from the slot during that time. And also the fact that he has Mike McCarthy now, I think that's going to increase the passing volume as a whole, especially since they kept Kellen Moore. But also, McCarthy has always featured his top weapon from the slot. Part of that has been Randall Cobb, has been a slot specialist and one of the best during the early 2010s. But even when Cobb was out, Jordy Nelson or Devontae Adams in 2016 and 18, we always saw them get moved to the slot as well. So I just think if he is playing a lot more routes, running a lot more routes from the slot, and the team is also more pass heavy, particularly in the red zone, which is somewhere McCarthy's always been near the top of the league. Of course, that's influenced by Aaron Rodgers, and Dallas has been near the bottom of the league, which is influenced by Zeke. But if it balances out a little bit more, which I'm projecting it, I think Amari has the upside to be somebody that is going to finish in that top three receiver spot, and people aren't drafting him that way. But the downside is a little bit scary, too, especially with the cornerback matchups.
All right. Well, the other three that you had were McLaurin, Paris Campbell, and Zach Moss. I do want to skip back. We have so much to do in the show today.
Yeah.
Perhaps they'll come up sort of organically throughout the show. We have to obviously talk about Dave winning poker the other night. It was a great night for him. He's very proud of it. He made sure that I brought it up. So good job.
Thank you. I'm wearing my Andrew Neme favorable shirt to celebrate today.
That's great. I have no idea what that is.
I am the champion, my friends. You don't know who Andrew Neme is? Everybody knows who Andrew Neme is. Tell him, Ben.
Someone else who doesn't know who Andrew Neme is.
I feel so much better when other people don't know. I came in second. Gretch came in third.
Do you at least know who Brad Owen is?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure. There we go. Okay, I'm not going to ask any more questions.
Brad Owen, of course.
You're Brad Owen. You know what? You and Brad both love cats. It's perfect.
We go way back, me and Brad Owen. Dave had a sneaky trivia question that I don't know the answer to. Go for it.
Okay. So who were the top two running backs, minimum 100 carries, in Pro Football Focus's elusive metric? So it's a combination of missed tackles, broken tackles, both on runs and catches. Here's a hint. They are both played in the same division. And here's another hint. The division is in the AFC.
I know one of them.
Oh, well, then you should be able to guess the other one.
Yeah, who's the first one? So I can try
Josh Jacobs.
Josh Jacobs was number one.
Yeah.
Austin
and it actually
Eckler.
it put me over the top to move
then
him up.
Philip Lindsay's number two. Austin Eckler.
It's Eckler, yeah.
Yeah, it's Eckler, of course.
Incorrect.
Oh,
that is incorrect.
That
it's Damian Williams.
Whoa. Wow.
I couldn't believe it. That's what the website said. Damian Williams was second in elusive rating. I don't think that necessarily means a whole lot since they spent the first round pick on Edwards-Helaire. And we've talked a lot about CEH versus Damian all week long, so I'm not going to do it again. But I thought that was interesting that Damian Williams was up there. And the fact that Josh Jacobs, if he's as elusive as that stat says, and I watched the film, he was breaking tackles and juking dudes like crazy.
He's awesome.
With Henry Ruggs pushing those safeties back, there's and a good offensive line, I had to give Josh Jacobs more credit. So he has moved up for me.
To where?
In non-PPR, he's a first-round pick for me. I will take him in non-PPR. You know me, I'm always going to take running backs over receivers early. I've got him eighth. In full PPR,
projected, I believe, for the third most rushing yards in the NFL this year.
Yeah, I've got him 18th in full PPR.
18th so overall, difference. Not RB18.
Oh, no way.
Right.
Well, you think I'm trying to lose my leagues here, Adam?
No, I'm just clarifying.
So, round one, I will take Josh Jacobs in round one in non-PPR. Half PPR, full PPR, give me him in round two. No problem. I was already taking him in round two in PPR, so this isn't big breaking news there.
Is there any justification?
Stay away from Jacobs.
Is there any justification for taking Nick Chubb ahead of Josh Jacobs?
I can't say so at this point. That's one of the guys I moved Jacobs over. For
it? Yeah, what would be the justification?
A lot of the splits between Chubb and Hunt were more touchdown related than people realize. Like he did lose some receiving, but people point out his PPR scoring was way worse when Hunt was active, but his touchdowns also fell off. I think he scored 6 of his 8 touchdowns in the 8 games before Hunt came.
That's a fact.
That's exactly.
And then
right.
two in the 8 games after. I don't expect him to still only score 2 per 8 games or a 4 touchdown pace for a season. I expect that he has double digit touchdown potential pretty easily. I think they're really similar. I actually project Chubb to see a few more targets as well overall, like 4. But I have Chubb as a very efficient runner as well, and he's one of the two people I have projected for more rushing yards than Jacobs. So for me, like in my projections, Chubb comes out higher than Jacobs with a very similar line across the board, but higher than him in both scoring systems.
Okay.
That's interesting. And by the way, Chubb was 3rd in that Pro Football Focus metric.
That's pretty good.
Interesting decisions people will have to make between Jacobs and Chubb this year. And I just think that having Kareem Hunt healthy, and I think that's going to make the choice for people that they're going to go with Jacobs. Not that Jacobs is going to be every single touch for Vegas, but he's got to share too. But I don't think it'll be as much as Chubb will with Hunt.
My only thing on Jacobs is you're using a second round pick or first round if it's standard to place a bet on the Raiders. And that's just not something I'm super comfortable doing unless they change his receiving role, but nothing they've done this offseason indicates that they will. And he had, his snap rate dropped from 64% to 50% in losses last year. And his touches came down from 24 per game to 16. And I don't know. I actually have him projected ahead of Chubb. And he's obviously awesome as a rusher, but I am worried about the volume and I don't know if LA will be playing with as many leads as they were last year.
Okay. Vegas. Yeah, put money in the jar.
There it is.
Right now, Nick Chubb is going 2 spots ahead of Josh Jacobs. Goes Chubb, then Eckler, then Jacobs. There might be a wide receiver there too.
The team point that Jacob just made, I think, is a good one because part of the reason I have Chubb higher is I'm projecting Cleveland to be better this year. I think they're a sneaky team and I've said that, and they have a much better offensive line. The Browns have a better offensive line than last year.
And they did last year.
Yeah, they had.
You're not comparing two teams.
No.
Okay. Yes, I agree with you.
Yeah, they just upgraded both tackle spots, and their offensive line's very good. And I think their team's going to be a lot better because of that. And so I have Chubb projected for a lot more touchdowns, like two more touchdowns. So
okay. I'm going to give a little love to the Raiders. I think, you know, Gruden's done a better job than I thought he would. Last year, I thought he was my coach of the year candidate. Like midway through, they kind of fell apart. But I don't think they're total trash. They've had a lot of early draft picks that maybe on defense could kind of develop. They're going to finish in 2nd place in the division. Wow. Bold prediction.
Wow.
Which I don't think is that bold. I think all 3 teams after the Chiefs were projected for the same amount of wins by William Hill Schrager. Is that right? Remember that? Yeah. We did the projections.
Yeah, that was correct.
Yeah, so not that bold, but I'll take it, even though I don't really believe it, but I'm riding the momentum of what I'm saying right now. Promoting a few things. We've got rankings disputes next week. We got everything you need to know about training camp battles and more. We're going to kind of predict who's going to move up and down in ADP before training camp. And we're back on CBS Sports HQ. noon to 12:30 p.m. Eastern, cbssportshq.com. And of course, you can watch on the HQ app. So if you have like a Roku or an Apple TV or Amazon Fire or whatever, download the HQ app and watch HQ. Not just for fantasy, but sports coverage. Sports is back, baby. So watch HQ, and it's 24/7 great sports coverage. It's none of that stupid argument stuff like that we can't stand anymore. It's just the way you grew up watching sports coverage. CBSSportsHQ.com or download the app. And again, Sportsline, can't emphasize how great of a resource this is. Join Sportsline for $1 for your first month, and then it's only $9.99 after that. Gambling sites are like crazy expensive. Sportsline doesn't work that way, and we have amazing experts there as well. Go to sportsline.com, use the promo code HUDDLE for your first month for $1. Follow Jacob on Twitter at JAGibbs_23. At JAGibbs_23. We got some news and notes for you here. Let's go, football team. Let's go, football team. Or will the champ be football team? Football team. The Washington fans have some choices to make as the Washington football team will take the field for the 2020 season. This is their temporary placeholder name, the Washington football team.
Okay. Very good, like generic Madden jerseys as well.
Have fun with it.
Yeah, I'm not ripping them. They're trying to do the right thing.
They are, but we're just going to tease a little bit because their team name is the Washington football team, you know?
Like, but the decision to go away from the old name is absolutely correct, right? But they've pulled their teeth for a half a decade or more, actually a lot more than that, but mm-hmm. especially the last like 4 or 5 years, it's been like every year we've talked about it. And then they finally are doing away with the name, but just pick a new name. Don't be a Washington football team for a whole season and use generic unis. It's ridiculous.
I almost feel like it's a troll job, honestly. Like they're doing it just to kind of get back at people for making them change the name.
Should the Seahawks sue them and be like, hey, we're the Washington football team? By the way, Greg,
there's two places that both are called Washington. That's funny.
Yeah, right. People don't know that. There's a district and a state. Gretch, you get a haircut?
My wife cut my hair.
Looks good.
Good job.
Yeah.
She did a good job. Last week she cut it. Yeah.
Mrs. Gretch. All right. Mike Zimmer signed a contract extension, and Antonio Brown is no longer retiring. In fact, he is demanding the NFL to complete its investigation so he can find out when he's eligible. I've always sort of agreed with that. Like, it does seem like an NFL investigations are endless. But I have no sympathy for Antonio Brown. Okay. Let's read an email. Email of the day number one is from John in a city in Rhode Island not named Providence.
Oh. It's not a big state. Hard to come up with another name. I don't know if I've got one off the top of my head.
Isn't Family Guy in Providence? Like, what's the city called there?
They're in Quahog.
Quahog.
But, yeah.
There we go.
They're not in Massachusetts? Oh, they're in Rhode Island. You're right. They're in Quahog, Rhode Island. Yeah. Deer, Polk, Mahone, Slim Charles, and Cheese. No? Jacob, no?
No idea.
This is apparently The Wire. The Wire.
Oh man, I should have got that.
Mm-hmm. All right. So this email from John in Quahog. Every year I look into Breeze and Big Ben's home road splits to see how they line up to possibly pair them together. And this year it's looking spicy. Breeze, his ADP is roughly 84. Roethlisberger is roughly 130. Draft them both, and this is what you're looking at. And he gives us the player that you could play every week. I won't go through it all. But, you know, for those of you who don't know, Drew Breeze, his points per game in 6 point per passing touchdown leagues at home the last 5 years, four of those 5 years, it's been 27.4 fantasy points or more. Like, he's just unstoppable at home. And three of the last 5 years, it's been 18.6 or less on the road. So if you just commit to playing Drew Breeze only in home games and looking for other options on the road, if you choose Ben Roethlisberger, there are only 4 weeks where you'd have to play a matchup against a team that was top 15 in fantasy points allowed to quarterbacks last year. There'll be only 4 times when you're forced to start one of these players on the road. The playoff matchups don't look great. That's the only problem. Week 14, it's either Breeze at the Eagles or Ben at the Bills. Week 15, Breeze is home against the Chiefs. Week 16, Roethlisberger's home against the Colts. So you do get home games from Brees and Roethlisberger. Week 14 is tough. But that's an interesting one. Roethlisberger might be the best answer. I looked at other possibilities. You know, I think Daniel Jones really might be a good one to pair with Brees. His first two matchups aren't great. Bears and Rams on the road. But then these are just when Brees is on the road. Redskins, Bucks, Redskins, Bengals, Seahawks, Cardinals. So, I don't know. I have some. Mayfield, Tyrod Taylor, Daniel Jones, Aaron Rodgers, Jared Goff. Those are the five quarterbacks I found that had the best matchups to pair with Brees, but I think Roethlisberger might be the winner. So, any merit to this, Dave Richard?
I think it makes sense. I don't think it would hurt you to give it a shot. I mean, at the very least, everybody feels good starting Drew Brees when he's at home. And most people who play fantasy, they'll deal with Drew Brees when he's on the road because sometimes he can be pretty good on the road. And just the idea of adding another quarterback to go with him and to play the matchups based on where Drew Brees is, I think Roethlisberger is a great quarterback to pair with anybody just because he's a great cheap quarterback on draft day that could end up finishing as a top 10 option. There are photos circulating on the Twitter sphere showing Roethlisberger losing a lot of weight. He looks kind of svelte. I like it.
Nice. Yeah.
I like it.
So again, the names I gave were Mayfield. Like if you went with Mayfield and you just cared about the start of your season, well, no, he's not a great example. Tyrod Taylor, maybe. Depending on how you feel about the Chiefs defense, it would be a home game for the Chargers. Chiefs, Bucks, Jets, Jaguars, Raiders. Those would be the first five matchups for Taylor while Drew Brees is on the road. Of course, that stretches into week 9. I don't know if Taylor's still going to be the quarterback at that point. Aaron Rodgers. You play Brees at home and the three times you have to sit him, the first three times, Rodgers has Detroit, Atlanta, and Tampa Bay. You know, you could consider that. So it was interesting. Last year, it was Lamar Jackson who had these great matchups. Didn't matter what the matchups were for Jackson, it turned out. But here's a question, a follow-up for Jacob. Do you think that Drew Brees will be as dominant at home without any fans? Do you think that will have any impact?
Yeah, that was something I was thinking about. I mean, he's still playing on the Azure turf, but I don't know. I don't know if that's... I hate things like that aren't quantifiable. Right. I was thinking as you're laying out the strategy anyway, that unless this is a deep league where you have lots of bench spots, I wouldn't want to employ this type of strategy just because I don't like keeping two quarterbacks on my team, especially if one of them is someone dependable like Brees. So I would probably just be looking to stream on the road splits. But yeah, I really don't know. I don't have an answer for the home road switch with the new look NFL. It's going to be crazy.
Well, Ben always laughs at me when I bring it up. Like he just thinks I'm stupid, I think.
Yeah, the crowd is quiet when they have the ball.
Yeah, but it's the energy. There's energy. They feed off of it.
All right.
Like, I don't think it would have a big impact, but I don't know. There's no way to quantify that. I don't know.
It might have an impact on the other team that's coming to visit and doesn't have to deal with the crowd when they're on offense.
I'm almost positive. Like, he's so good in primetime home games. I brought that up. And while he's so good at home in general, I'm pretty sure he's like even better in primetime home games. So why is that, Ben? I think it's because of the energy.
I mean, maybe. Why would that be any different than...
Because it's primetime. It's night. They're fired up.
So what you're suggesting is the New Orleans fans, great fans, all of our great loyal listeners in New Orleans, don't actually get excited for games that aren't primetime.
Oh, they do, but they get extra excited for primetime. Dude, let me ask you a question.
I think he just knows he's on primetime.
That might be true also.
He's got the spotlight on him.
Yeah, that might be true also. But let me ask you this. Washington's got... They're 11-0, and they got the Apple Cup, their last game, right? That's what it's called, right? Against Washington State?
Yeah.
And they say to you, okay, fans, you get to choose day game or night game. What are you going to choose? You're going to be there, Ben, for this big game. They're number two in the country. I mean, you need to be there.
I don't understand what your point is, but I always
night games, more energy. Fans are more
pumped. I always love going to day college football games and would probably pick the day game.
Oh, that's so weak, man. Night games are the best. There is nothing like a night college football game. All right, let's get to another email. Email of the day number two is from Colin in Canada. Hey guys, you're the best in the business. I should have read this before I went on my whole nighttime fans rant. We're no longer the best in the business.
Well, he said guys, not you have the best host in the business.
While watching your July 23rd show, it dawned on me if they made a movie about CBS Fantasy Football today, who would play who? Here's my casting. Heath would be played by Nick Cage, rocking a deep... rocking a deep V-neck. Heath is just letting the V-neck hang, like letting the chest hair hang out on YouTube. Adam, I think Jesse Eisenberg would be a good one to play you.
No, Jesse's got to play Jamie. It's the role he was literally born to play.
I think this might kill Jamie, but I think Jesse and I have more in common than he and Jamie. Like,
oh my God.
I think Jesse would be a better fit for me. You going to text him?
Immediately.
Jacob, you may not know, Jesse Eisenberg and Jamie Eisenberg are I think they're first cousins. They're cousins.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
They're first cousins. They're like brothers.
Yeah, very close.
I think I have more in common with Jesse Eisenberg.
Ben, Channing Tatum would play you.
Then. I mean, I'll take it.
Oh, they're definitely talking about me.
Oh, that's right. My bad.
Yeah, they always get the Bens confused.
All right, let's go. Who am I? Peter Griffin?
George Clooney is Jamie. And to me, Dave is the hardest, but I'd say either Russell Crowe or Jack Black. Can you go any farther on the spectrum there? Russell Crowe or Jack Black?
I'll take Jack Black. Russell Crowe.
Yeah, Jack Black would be fun. He'd be a good. Yeah. He'd be a good Dave Richard for sure. All right, thank you for the email. We got to talk about handcuffs. Let me read one more question here. This is a debate inspired by Teddy, one of our listeners. Is it okay to sit a DST if you already have a lead going into Monday Night Football? He won his league last year. He was losing by 3 going into Monday Night Football. His opponent could have sat the DST but didn't play the DST. The DST scored -3 points. He was down by like 2.8 points. His DST scored -3 and this guy won. I said it's ridiculous to even be able to do that. You should have to play a DST no matter what. What do you guys think? Should you be able to sit a DST going into Monday Night Football?
What do you mean you should have to play a DST? Like, why?
Oh, you should have to play a legal lineup.
You should have to play something that can't help you do any better than you've already done, but could potentially make you lose.
Yes, because it's not fair. Because the other guy, the other or girl, the other player in this matchup could have had a DST that scored negative points, but their DST played on Sunday. They don't get this luxury.
What? That's just the schedule.
I think it's cheap to take a player out of your lineup.
But should it be illegal? There's no arguing that it's cheap.
Terrible Azer take.
No, I don't.
Just explain someone who lost their championship because they didn't take the DST out of their lineup. That's an action that they, as a manager of a team, did not do, and it cost them the championship. And you're saying that they shouldn't be allowed to do that?
Correct.
You shouldn't be allowed to help your team?
All it is this. You have to field a legal lineup and start a legal lineup every week. That's all it is. Gibbs, what do you think?
I agree with Ben. I'm not going to.
Come on! Yep. Dave, you agree too?
Yeah. Look, I think I think it's cheap, but I don't think it should necessarily be illegal.
Shraggy B?
Oh, I totally agree. I think you should definitely be able to do it. One thing you have to keep in mind, though, if it's like a 1-point lead, those stat corrections on Thursday morning could get you. So I'd love to do it. 2.8 point lead. I'm sitting the DST.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I just don't agree that you should be able to sit any player. I think you start a lineup. That is really interesting that all four of you. Well, I thought everybody would agree with me. Because you know why, Dave? We don't play any leagues where you can do that.
You usually think everyone would agree with your turn.
No, are you kidding? I never expect that. I never. We don't play in any leagues that are like that. So I'm surprised that you would agree.
No, we just have classy competitors. And it might have happened in one of the leagues that we're in and we just don't know it.
Ben, let me ask you this. You're playing in a points league for baseball. Jacob Gibbs, you play fantasy baseball, right?
Yep.
All right, all three of you play fantasy baseball. You're playing in a points league. You're up by 2 points going into Sunday night baseball, last game of the week. You've got a hitter left. Do you really think you should be able to bench that hitter? Because he could score negative points by striking out. You really think you should be able to bench that hitter?
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
If you have daily lineup transactions, why can't you bench? Yeah. You've won the matchup.
You got to put a spot.
It's the end of the week.
You got to put a player in that lineup spot.
That made your argument worse.
you know what? I think it kind of did. We're going to take a break. I got to regroup and talk about handcuffs when we come back on Fantasy Football Today.
Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow, now streaming on Paramount Plus, only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS! Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island, you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday, starting at 9, 8 central. On CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Guest of honor, Jacob Gibbs, are you a handcuffer? Do you draft your starting running backs back up?
I do not handcuff. I think it's a low upside strategy. So I'm playing to get first.
Anybody else? Anybody want to weigh in on that? Do you handcuff?
I am this year. Hashtag COVID-19.
Yeah, that's a good point. Ben? Yeah. Same?
I guess a little of both. I almost never do on the same vein as what Jacob just said, but then this year you kind of have to consider it, I think. And I have done it a little bit.
In the case of Saquon Barkley, I don't know if it's really worth it because I think his backup is going to end up being Deion Lewis and he'll probably end up sharing with Wayne Gallman if, for some terrible reason, Saquon misses games. And that's not really going to help you. But there are a lot of other running backs who are real-life backups to really good starters, and they're pretty good too. And I imagine that we're about to talk about them all.
The obvious handcuffs are that people will take are Alexander Mattison, Tony Pollard, Latavius Murray, Chase Edmonds.
I think Edmonds deserves it, yeah.
Those are the big four.
Evans.
Am I missing anyone?
Yes. Absolutely in this tier.
Yeah, Darrington Evans.
Yep. How about Gio with Joe Mixon? Because he's been pretty good when Joe Mixon's been out.
2 years ago, I mean, Mixon played 16 games last year, but 2 years ago, Bernard had 14 and 20 non-PPR points, 19 and 24 PPR points in two games without Mixon.
Mm-hmm. I love Gio. I've struggled with him because I took him late in some earlier drafts, but Travion Williams and Gio's mm-hmm. getting a little older. I'm a little concerned that it might be a split if Mixon misses time.
Right, but we don't know if that would be the case or not. And I liked Travion coming out. He was one of my favorite running backs that year. But we'll see. I think if I'm drafting Joe Mixon and I want to have that backup plan, I don't think Gio is a bad choice for those people who draft Mixon. Plus, you can literally do it with your last pick unless you draft with Heath Cummings. If you draft with Heath, he'll take Gio before you get the chance. But most people aren't targeting Giovanni Bernard on draft day. And so you could literally take a DST before taking Gio.
Would you guys count Zach Moss or not? Because he kind of already has a role.
Yeah. I mean, him and Kareem Hunt come to mind as well, but we're probably not counting Kareem Hunt, I assume.
Right. They're kind of expensive handcuffs.
Well, Moss is not.
Like diamond studded.
Like Philip Lindsay and Zach Moss are going in the 10th round. And considering that they will have a role and you might be able to play them as a flex if you need it, like in a bye week or something, and that if Melvin Gordon gets hurt or Devin Singletary get hurt, there's pretty big upside. I think the 10th round feels pretty good for Lindsay and Moss. And I would go so far as to say that if you own Singletary or Gordon, that you probably really should be looking at Lindsay and Moss in the 10th round.
We haven't named probably the best one, and he's also expensive, but I think J.K. Dobbins is probably the highest upside pure handcuff. He'll play, and he could get the Gus Edwards role, but I think the reason to draft him is if Mark Ingram misses time, the upside. You're probably not thinking of him as a flex like you might be some of the other guys that Adam just mentioned.
He's so excited, but he's 68th overall. I don't know. For me, the handcuff is more of a late round pick.
Okay.
Right? I mean, you're pretty...
Right, Dobbins isn't that.
Yeah.
Not anymore. No, I'll give you one more. Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay. What about if you have McCaffrey?
Then you don't need to get Mike Davis or Reggie Bonifone. They're not going to be anywhere near as good.
So here's the issue I have with this discussion when people poo-poo handcuffs. If one of those running backs gets hurt, who's going to be the number one player on waivers? Who's going to be the player that people spend 60% of their fab budget on? right? This is a very highly sought after player a lot of times. It doesn't always work out, but this player becomes a must own. So, Jacob, I'll throw that to you since you don't like doing it, and a lot of people don't. No, what's your response to that?
For Carolina specifically?
No, because I can understand, like, we don't know who it's going to be. We don't know if it's going to be a great situation. But if you draft Ezekiel Elliott, why wouldn't you take Tony Pollard? You know, if Zeke gets hurt, everybody's going to want Pollard. He's going to be 100% owned by Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess the one that might not get drafted that has the potential to play a three-down role, been mentioned already, is Darrington Evans. It depends on how deep your league is. He's getting drafted in a lot of leagues. But, yeah, that's probably my answer. I think we've already hit on a lot of the other ones.
But you just don't want to waste the roster spot on Pollard because you just think as long as Zeke's healthy, it's just taking up space.
Well, if you guys like handcuffing, you would actually hate drafting me because I go out of my way to draft the Pollards and Chase Edmonds because I think they do have the upside to be a difference maker if their starter gets hurt. So I get those guys even if I don't have the starter on their team because I think they have more upside than the other running backs that are going in that draft range.
I feel like you do handcuff then.
I don't handcuff because I don't have a starter. I just take those guys because they have the upside that a lot of the other backs don't.
But okay,
you're
but if
buying
you did
the lottery
have,
ticket.
Yeah, but if you did have the starter, you would take those guys because you take them anyway.
He said it's a low upside strategy because if you're picking Ezekiel Elliott, you're already committing a ton of your draft capital and your overall team for this mm-hmm. one roster into Ezekiel Elliott being good. Or else yeah. you're probably not going to win. Maybe you have Tony Pollard to fill it in, but if Ezekiel Elliott gets hurt, you know you're going to have some drop off with Pollard, and it's probably not going to work out perfectly where you're still going to be as good as you could be. If you have Elliott and you take Darrington Evans and Derrick Henry gets hurt, now you have Elliott and Darrington Evans.
Gotcha. So you're saying, Jacob, you're less likely to take Tony Pollard if you have Zeke?
Yeah.
Okay, I get you.
Yeah, and I go the opposite direction. I want to improve my investment in Ezekiel Elliott. Cause I'm doing what Ben already said. I'm putting in this huge amount of draft capital into the Dallas Cowboys run game. And I know that the guy directly behind Ezekiel Elliott, the one who would get Ezekiel Elliott's workload if Zeke were to miss time, is a pretty good player too. Is it going to be exactly as good as Ezekiel Elliott? No, but he could be 80% of them. So I am absolutely targeting Tony Pollard. I'm going to prioritize Tony Pollard if I draft Ezekiel Elliott.
But it is.
And I'm doing the exact same thing. Sorry, with Dalvin Cook and Alexander Mattison, especially if Dalvin Cook is threatening to hold out and might not be there for the start of training camp, and I'm drafting before the start of training camp or in the early days of training camp. I don't know why I would be, because that would be a waste of time. But Mattison would absolutely be a high priority for me.
But it is kind of, I don't want to say a low upside strategy. It's an insurance policy, right? But you're using two picks for one spot. And it doesn't always even work out that way, because one of the issues with handcuffing is the guy that we're identifying preseason isn't always the one who's ready. I mean, Madison's a great example. Last year, he was hurt when Cook went down, and we had Mike Boone as the waiver wire pickup.
But what if Madison had stayed healthy? Like, he could have won you your fantasy championship.
There's a lot of examples of that, and it's not if you look at it from a broader perspective, I've seen studies on it. Like, it's typically not the person that we expect in the preseason, or not maybe not typically, but it's often enough that it's a problem. And then the big thing is, like, what I was just laying out, like, Dave's doing an insurance policy. It makes sense, but he's using two roster spots for one potential starter. The other example that Jacob is describing is potentially two starters, right? Like, those two roster spots could become two starters if it's not your running back, but someone else's running back who gets hurt, which is why it's a high ceiling situation, right? You can wind up having a lot of really good players on your team.
Yeah.
But if you do Jacob's situation and Zeke gets hurt and Derrick Henry doesn't, then I don't know.
It's high variance.
And you have zero good players.
First or last. Yeah.
Right. And maybe the philosophy behind that is, well, if my first round pick goes down, my chances of winning the league aren't very good anyway. But I think you're safeguarding it by doing the insurance policy. It really just depends on the running back and whether or not they're good. Like the Panthers example is a perfect one. Like, Mike Davis might not even be 50% of Christian McCaffrey. And that's if he's the guy.
So let me go through the top, like, 20-ish, 15 to 20 running backs, and you tell me who you would handcuff, and if you would handcuff that player, who's the backup? Christian McCaffrey.
No.
I would take Bonifant, but I'm not handcuffing McCaffrey. I took him in the Scott Fishbowl's 24-round draft, and I didn't take Bonifant.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Saquon Barkley.
It's Gallman as the handcuff. And I don't think I'm taking him in a regular 12 team, 15 round draft.
I have Deion Lewis as the number two here, but I wouldn't take him either.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like they'd split like last year. Like, this is my point kind of on why handcuffing is not a bad idea if you can do it. Wayne Gallman started one game. He might have started two, got hurt super early, but that one game, he had 63 yards and a touchdown on the ground. He had 55 yards and a touchdown in the air. He had a huge 2-touchdown game. He was a weak winner. Then he got hurt. The Giants have Deion Lewis, so it's kind of messy now.
Wait, was that your argument for why he was worth the pick?
I mean, I would not have done it
during the season last year.
Because like ultimately, like he just went and got hurt himself. Like there, it's my point would be that's not a guarantee, right? Like it's not a guarantee that Barkley missed multiple games that you're going to get multiple games of Gallman playing at a Barkley level. You did get one,
yeah,
but then he got hurt.
Right. Okay, and was that worth the 20% of fab that you spent?
What am I supposed to say? Like, I'm not going to take a handcuff because my handcuff could get hurt?
Yeah.
No.
That's what kind of philosophy is that? That doesn't make any sense.
The philosophy is you take a running back on a different team. Like, my point is, like, you thought you had, you used two roster spots to lock down the Giants backfield.
I didn't even lock it down. Okay. Both guys got hurt. There's not much I can do about that, but I didn't take Wayne Gallman. I was just saying Wayne Gallman stepped in and won you a week. Latavius Murray had two of the best weeks of like.
No one's saying that running backs step in can't be good. I mean,
not just good.
The end of yesterday.
Look at Latavius Murray. Look what Latavius Murray did last year in the two games he started. He had over 30 PPR fantasy points in both games, I think.
This is
right around
not a point that I'm arguing at all.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. That's why it helps to have the handcuff.
It just saves you so much trouble and waiver space or waiver moves.
All right, back to the exercise here so we can read our Apple podcast questions. Zeke is Tony Pollard. Kamara is Latavius. Dalvin Cook is Madison. Derrick Henry is Darrington Evans. Joe Mixon, you heard us talk about that. Maybe it's Gio. Do you think about handcuffing Miles Sanders?
I think if he goes down, they're probably going to sign someone. I mean, I like Boston Scott anyway as a late round option, especially in PPR formats. And I think he could be more involved. Obviously, if Sanders goes down, but I don't think he would be a three down back. Do you guys?
No. I don't know if he would be, but I have Boston Scott as one of my favorite late round running backs right now.
Yeah.
Right. Because he's got some good PPR standalone value.
Right. And then if he does get any kind of uptick in the rushing role, if there is an injury in front of him, that's where the monster upside comes from, is a guy who already has the pass catching role and then earns. Mm-hmm. The rushing side. I mean, that's been true of, it was true of Devonta Freeman back way back whenever, when Tevin Coleman got hurt, it was true of David Johnson before his breakout season. There's a million examples. I don't know why those are the only two that popped into my head right away, but
Miles Sanders
last year, he had 30 point upside right away. I mean, it's always Austin Eckler.
All right. We're never going to finish here. So, Kenyon Drake is Chase Edmonds, Aaron Jones, AJ Dillon.
I think it's A.J. Dillon, although, you know, I talked to Jamal Williams' trainer, and he's saying that Jamal Williams is, you know, great shape and learning to be a better pass catcher and going to vie for a spot in the slot in Green Bay's offense. I think Dillon is still the one I would take and then battle for Jamal Williams off the waiver wire if it came to that.
Nick Chubb, not really, because Kareem Hunt's too expensive. Austin Eckler, if you had Austin Eckler and you wanted a handcuff, who would you take the shot on?
Joshua Kelly.
Perfect example of why you wouldn't handcuff, in my opinion. I'm leaning more towards Justin Jackson now because of the rookie stuff we've been talking about. That's one situation where I'm going to side with the guy who's been on the team.
Josh Jacobs.
That one's Jaylen a mess. Richard. I think it's Richard, and he's certainly the one who has that passing role, so he would see an expanded role, but I don't know if he's particularly great as a rusher. But he'd probably see an uptick.
They never give him work. I mean,
well, they might have to if there's no Josh Jacobs.
Well, Jacobs missed three games last year, and I'm looking at...
Well, they had DeAndre Washington.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, but they have never shown the willingness to give... I think he has one game in his career with 10 carries.
That sounds right.
So, something like that. So,
well,
yeah.
Let me look at their depth chart real quick, because I'm blanking
on... This whole exercise is just erroneous. I just want that on the record.
No, it's not.
This whole exercise, we're trying to be precise about something that the whole point is imprecise.
Well, is that not fantasy football? Is that not sports in general?
They have Devontae Booker. They've got Rod Smith. and Lynn Bowden on top of Jalen Richard, it would be ugly if Josh Jacobs went down. They'd have a bunch of pass catching running backs. Might be good for Derek Carr.
Bowden's a fun guy to target, though.
All right, let's
is he going to get enough targets?
Oh, here we go. Apple Podcast questions from Josh. I'm wondering how many players that are drafted first in their position finish first in their position that same year.
That's rare.
McCaffrey did it just now, just recently.
No,
you
know. He was like third last year.
He was third
Barkley
last year.
Barkley was one.
I
think receivers do it fairly occasionally. Antonio Brown definitely did it.
Quarterbacks rarely. Like Drew Brees did it back-to-back years, and I don't even think he was the number one quarterback.
Kelsey is one.
Yes.
Pass catchers are it's a lot.
And Gronk. Gronk was that guy once upon a time. Maybe that's the position.
I think Gurley in 2018 was the number one pick, and he finished in non-PPR as the number one running back. And I think he finished points per game number one in PPR, but he was behind McCaffrey and Barkley. But no, look, it doesn't happen that often.
It happens more commonly at the pass catching positions, for sure. Wide receiver and tight end.
Mm-hmm. Who is the one player that's going first at his position that you're most concerned about not finishing first?
What's the quarterback ADP? Is it still Mahomes over Lamar Jackson?
I'll tell you in a second. I mean, they're practically tied. It's Kelsey, McCaffrey, and Michael Thomas, and Mahomes. Oh my gosh, their ADP is almost identical. Mahomes and Jackson.
Yeah, Jackson
really
would be the
fun
one
year
that
for
I would
this
be
too.
About.
This is a really interesting year for this because McCaffrey won RBs by like we're saying how often does the number one player repeat? But part of why McCaffrey wasn't the number one last year is him and Saquon were really close the year before. Last year, McCaffrey dominated the running back production by like 100 PPR points. Michael Thomas dominated wide receivers. Lamar Jackson dominated quarterbacks. It was a weird year where the number one in every position was way ahead. So maybe this year we're like, it's hard to see Michael Thomas not doing it. It's hard to see Christian McCaffrey not doing it again when they were that far ahead last year.
So
I make the case for Thomas.
Michael Thomas, Jacob?
I actually have Devontae Adams ranked ahead of him. So I would take him ahead of Thomas. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it kind of took a perfect storm for Thomas to get where he did last year. I expect Alvin Kamara to be a lot more involved in the red zone this year. They brought in Emmanuel Sanders, so I don't think he'll have a huge impact, but he is there. And I think that perfect storm situation we saw for Thomas last year is what we're seeing for Devonta Adams this year. Touchdown regression is definitely coming. I think he could run more routes from the slot. He's actually led the NFL in fantasy points per target from the slot over the last 2 years, I think. I think it was definitely a case to be made, whereas at the other positions, it's tougher.
Our next question from Justin in Atlanta. I was curious if Tariq Cohen and Chase Edmonds are underrated in your opinions. I looked up the seasons Foles played the most, 2013 and 15, and in the games he started, he targeted running backs 5.3 times per game in 2013 and 9.63 times per game in 2015. Also, Kenyon Drake hasn't had a significant workload since high school, but Chase Edmonds isn't considered one of the high-end backups. Well, he is for us, for sure. So I think we agree that Edmonds is underrated. Is Tariq Cohen underrated?
Yes. And that's the immobile quarterback / scrambling quarterback who throws to the running backs more thing. He noted Foles throws his running back a ton. Cohen had one of the quietest 79 catch seasons for a running back you'll ever see because he was very inefficient, but they're going to keep using him in that role. Like, they don't have anyone else. David Montgomery's not good. Sorry.
Okay, next question.
David Montgomery could be good if his offensive line was a lot better.
Fair.
But it's not there. And Cohen played half the snaps last year.
All right, next question. I'm in a 12-team PPR Superflex Dynasty League. I'm set at quarterback. I have Josh Allen, Carson Wentz, Baker Mayfield. I have Mike Evans, Eckler, Diggs, and Kittle. So pretty good team, Superflex PPR Dynasty. He traded my 2021 first round pick, 3 second rounders, a 2023 third round pick, Laviska Shenault and Cole Kmet, got AJ Brown, Alan Lazard, and Darius Geis. So
traded away Shenault, got Brown. Oh no!
Yeah, but he also traded away a first round pick, 3 second rounders, and then a third round pick in 2023, and Cole Kmet, basically for AJ Brown plus Lazard and Darius Geis.
He's got the best player who could help him win now, and he gave up a bunch of question marks to do it.
Easy win.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is from Paris. Hey, Cecilia, Nick, Robbie, and Jessica. I don't know.
Nothing. I don't either.
12-team, 1QB PPR Dynasty League. Who wins this trade? Kyler Murray, Kareem Hunt, Robert Woods, and 1.4. Kyler Murray, Kareem Hunt, Robert Woods, and 1.04.
That's a lot.
Wow.
For Daniel Jones, Mark Ingram, and Amari Cooper.
Ooh. The what?
The Kyler the Murray side. Yeah. big time, the Kyler Murray side. Woo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the Kyler Murray side. Okay. That was easy. Hey, Jacob, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. It was a lot of fun. Sorry to cause a little disruption there with the handcuffing, but it's not the right way to go.
We like
it's a decision everybody's going to have to make.
J.A. Gibbs _23.
New Girl, Adam.
What?
Oh, man.
New Girl? I love that show. How did I not get the... What were the names? Oh, Cece. The hell calls her Cecilia? I would have gotten it if you had said Cece. Get out of here, Paris. Tricky little trickster. At J.A. Gibbs _23, right?
Yeah, still got the underscore in there. Sorry.
Michael Jordan fan?
It was my number back when I played basketball. You know?
Michael Jordan stole it from him.
Yeah. Wow, that's impressive. Okay, that's this week of Fantasy Football Today. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. Enjoy your weekend. Wednesday or Monday. Monday we're back, not Wednesday. Rankings disputes. See you later. Go win your league.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.